Thank you very much, Mike, for the kind words. And I would like to thank you and all involved in the organization for inviting me. It's really an absolute honor and pleasure for me to be here again and to be given the opportunity to share my ongoing research with you. Green's novel, A Burnt-Out Case, which was published in January 1961, is set in the Belgian Congo. As usual, in preparation of this book, Green went on location. I have described Green's Congo trip, which he made during 5 weeks in early 1959, in detail in an online paper as well as in a contribution to, as Mike said, the first issue of Graham Greene Studies. What I'm interested in today is the diary Green kept during his trip in the Congo and the different versions or lives it went through from the very first manuscript version through its eventual publication. So what I'm offering today is an analysis of text. This diary was indeed published shortly after the novel, also in 1961. It was published in one volume together with the diary Green kept during his voyage in a cargo boat in 1941 from Liverpool to Freetown, the setting for The Heart of the Matter. The entire volume was given the title In Search of a Character, Two African Journals. The first diary bears the title Congo Journal. In the preface to the volume, Green wrote, "Neither of these journals was kept for publication, but they may have some interest as an indication of the kind of raw material a novelist accumulates. In what follows, I wish to argue that and how the materials and information offered in the Congo Journal are less raw than what Green wanted us to believe. I will show that the succession of the different lives the journal went through is marked by Green's many editorial interventions and carefully deliberated omissions, additions, and rewritings. The information left out or rewritten is, I believe, of particular interest to Green biographers and anyone interested in reconstructing not only the true particulars of his Congo trip, but also his general state of mind, heart, and soul at this particular point in his life, namely the first half of 1959. This is my overview of the five lives. First of all, we have the holograph, the Green's original handwritten manuscript of the Congo Journal. Secondly, there is the typescript, copied from the manuscript by Green's secretary, Josephine Reed. It is not a totally verbatim transcription. This typed copy already contains some changes and important omissions, mostly of passages of an erotic nature or bearing on the affairs Green had in Europe. A third life are the corrections and changes Green made on Reed's typescript in longhand, and these are quite substantial. Fourth, there are the changes Green applied in the step from this typescript to the galley proofs, implementing, of course, the corrections and changes of step three, but also adding new material. Especially new footnotes. New because they do not appear among Green's additions in longhand to the typescript of Life 3. These changes are minor in number but have some importance too, as I will argue. The fifth life, then, are corrections by Green off and on the galley proofs, some of his own initiatives, but many more inspired by admonitions for corrections and omissions he had received from Dr. Michel Lechat, the leprologist who was his host and main informant in the Congo, and who was the model for Dr. Collin in the novel. There are two other lives which I won't be talking about. There is the final publication, of course, the first edition by the Bodley Head, and if you compare that to the corrected galley proofs, I found one little difference, namely in one sentence in the introduction, very minor. I won't be talking about that. Sixth life, the seventh life, if you want, is the second edition by Penguin in 1968. I also compared it to the first edition. And there are here and there some typographical changes. A French word that wasn't in italics, that is now put in italics. A word written with a hyphen where it wasn't, etc. So I won't be concentrating on those. The first life, then, the original manuscript. It is in possession of the Harry Ransom Center in Austin, Texas. What can be said about it? First of all, possibly when still in the Congo, Green already made some changes and additions to the text. We can detect that from the different freshness of the same ink type. For instance, here, Green inserts the French word pig buff, which is the name of the elegant snow-white birds that attend the cows like guardian angels, as he writes in the remainder. So you see the word pig buff is clearly added later. And there are quite a number of cases like this on the manuscript itself. One noteworthy example being the title which he gave to the entire text, again at a later time, as we can tell from the positioning, right, above. Green has written on top, "In Pursuit of a Novel," clearly as a later edition. Maybe he only added this at the moment he decided to have it made ready for publication, maybe already in the Congo. Either way, he changed this again later. As we know, the final title of the published journal is not "In Pursuit of a Novel," but "In Search of a Character." The most intriguing of this kind of changes has to do with a young English lady whose real name he, already at this stage of the manuscript itself, decides to cross out and replace with the nickname Tony. In the eventual final publication of the Congo Journal, he went further than just this name change. You will find no mention at all of her. The removal was done in Life 2, as I will explain in a minute. In the manuscript, Green describes Tony as a 29-year-old married woman with whom he had an affair while still involved with Catherine Wollstone. The affair had already started in England, that is, before they traveled together to Belgium on Monday, 26th of January 1959, and spent the week together in the Brussels Palace Hotel. Green boarded a plane for the Congo 5 days later on Friday, 30th of January. In letters to his friend and confidant John Sutro, kindly indicated to me by John Wise, as well as in several entries in the Congo Diary manuscript, Green described Tony and the affair, especially the week spent in Brussels with trips to Bruges and other places. I will elaborate on the joint efforts of Mike Hill, John Wise, and Richard Green and myself, attempting to find out who the real person was behind this Tony, but I would first like to show you some of the passages in the manuscript relevant to her, as you won't find them in the published diary. He writes two letters from Tony, long, badly written, badly spelled, childlike and sophisticated. In another entry, "What a mysterious week that last week in England and Brussels was. A girl of 29, married 2 years to a man of 28 whom she loves, the first affair since marriage." There are technical reasons to believe that. "Then why and so easily? The mystery that surrounds her motives and character, the mixture of juvenility and the sophistication, even corrupt surroundings, attract one like fire. Whatever her motive, how ready and how sweet she was, and how she lifted me out of the hopeless, broken back state I was in after leaving Anita. Worried about Tony, it would be better if she turned wise. I have an awful inability to refuse, and tenderness has crept already into what began as a game I never expected would turn serious before I left England. To risk her marriage and mine, for I feel married to Catherine, is absurd, for neither of us are deeply engaged." An enormous mail and piles of newsletters, that's what he received in the Congo, right? He received an enormous pile of newspapers and mail. One letter from C, one from Tony. The good news from Cyprus may have put an end to that relationship. "I'm sorry, even though I know it's for the best. For once, there will be only pleasant memories, not even one quarrel in that week." Now, who may this Tony have been? First of all, these are some of the instances of Green crossing out the original name and writing Tony instead. Mike Hill, John Wise, Richard Green, and I have tried repeatedly and hard to try to decipher what may be underneath there. It seems to start with an A, and in some locations you can see an I as the last but one letter. But this may have been a nickname too, a first one, for which he then found Tony a better alternative. Secondly, if we rely on the information Green provides on her in the diary, as well as his letters to John Sutro, in which he mentions her, at least the ones I have seen so far, we still don't have a name. In these letters too, Green is careful enough not to name her. we might have an indication of when the affair started. In a letter to Sutro of 13th January 1959, Green writes, "My own appointments are getting congested, owing to the extreme developments due to a certain reckless move." Maybe this reckless move refers to the beginning of the affair, so around 13th of January 1959. Richard Green, having seen in the Bodleian the archives of Gillian Sutro, John Sutro's wife, archives that I am yet to explore, has indicated to me that Gillian Sutro, in her notebook, copied down a guess from Yvonne Cloetta, who apparently was also in the know, at least afterwards, suggesting that the girlfriend could have been one of the following, all actresses: Gigi, Heather Sears, Samantha Egger, or Allegra Sander. Gigi would be Leslie Caron, the French actress who played Gigi in the 1958 movie with that title. She was indeed 28 or 29 in January 1959, but she was French, which is not what Green seems to say about her. The actress Heather Sears was in 1959 indeed 2 years married to the production designer Anthony Tony Masters, which could give us a lead to Green's use of the nickname Tony. But in January 1959, she was only 23, not 29, as Green writes. And her husband, Tony Masters, was 39, not 28. Samantha Egger was only 20 in 1959 and did not marry until 1964. Allegra Sander, finally, was the author of Men, a Dialogue Between Women, to which Green had contributed a preface. But she was 30 in 1959. So the final word has not yet been said on the exact identity of Tony, but we might be drawing closer. At any rate, if you have the opportunity to reread A Burnt-Out Case, do pay attention to the character of Marie Rijker, the juvenile, lowly educated wife of Query's main antagonist, Rijker. Marie Rijker, in the novel, invents an affair with Query. Marie seems to me to be very strongly inspired by Tony, judging from Green's descriptions of her in his diary. Second Life, Reed's transcript. Reed, Josephine Reed transcribing the manuscript. As I mentioned, this manuscript is far from a verbatim copy of the handwritten manuscript. The main new thing is that there is an introduction of 2 pages, which, with some changes, would become the preface to the published version. Green must have given it to Reed in longhand when he also handed over his diary. Reed's typescript is marked by quite a number of important changes, or mostly omissions. I cannot list them all, but will illustrate the omission of passages having to do with his affairs back in Europe. These passages provide a unique window onto how Green felt and thought about his affairs in early 59, while being so far away from them. His stay in the Congo was a time for secluded reflection on his affairs. We should approach, of course, all this information not out of some cheap voyeurism, but for its scholarly biographical value. First, everything to do with Tony is left out by Reed. Green must have told her, simply not those passages, or she did it out of her own initiative and will. I'm not sure about that. Secondly, his other affairs. In the diary we read, "Dreamed angrily of Anita, and yet I have never thought of her angrily." That becomes, in Reed's version, "dreamed angrily of someone of whom I have never thought angrily." And that is still there in the final publication.
I'm not at the right point, right? Sorry, this is the one I wanted to show. Okay? Excuse
me. "Melancholy shows signs of returning, perhaps because of my dream. Anita too much in mind. The relationship with Tony too superficial to act as an anodyne when she is not there, and see too far away." In Reed's typescript, everything after dream is omitted. So the only thing remaining is "melancholy shows signs of returning, perhaps because of my dream." Right. The rest is omitted. And that's also how you will read it in the published version. So So I went to bed early and had bad jealous dreams of C, mixed with a Sapphira's threesome scene in a bed involving Tony, but quite unlike Tony. In the TypeScript, this becomes, and had bad jealous dreams, and all the rest is omitted. And for the final publication, you won't even find that part, right? So clearly, Green is so much reflecting on his affairs, the women in his life, that they even come together in one dream, yeah, in one scene. And Anita, back in my thoughts, I suppose she represented a whole way of family life that I was trying to recapture. And so she remains the unattained dream of peace. This is in the diary manuscript, completely omitted by Josephine Reed, and it remains absent in all the further lives of the journal. After close on 3 weeks, my mind runs too much on sex. Of the 15 honest women I have been to bed with, of the 15 odd tarts, it's not really legible, perhaps half a dozen had some importance. But over the years, only 2 people stay in my blood, though most of the 15 in my affection. Catherine and Anita. I fear to add Tony to these 2. This becomes, in Reed's version, over the years only 2 people stay in my blood and the rest is left out. And in the final publication, everything is left out. This is interesting information, I believe, about how he felt about each of the women in his life. Which ones remained in his heart, which ones didn't. Sad dreams last night of Anita. In 2.5 years, I have not dreamed so frequently of her. But perhaps this indicates the beginning of a cure. Perhaps I think of her less with my conscious mind. In my dream, I had to visit her on some point of business. She was back in a flat, and a man was there whom I was uncertain about. My successor or a brother? We were ill at ease together, and I no longer found her beautiful. I was reminded a little in her eyes of Vivian. Perhaps the association here was in my attempt for the only time since my marriage to settle in a family life. She seemed like Vivian, over-concerned with the objects in her life, decoration of the home, and perhaps indeed Anita might have developed that quality if she had not been saved by her vocation as an actress. This is completely left out by Josephine Reed. And again, I think important or significant biographical information how he felt about Anita Björk at that time. That much for Life 2, Life 3. So Reed has transcribed the manuscript, has a TypeScript, and now Green starts correcting that TypeScript. As you can see, they are massive in general and very meticulous. Green did a very meticulous job at that point. So these include the usual corrections of material typing errors, also a lot of linguistic, stylistic changes are involved, and most importantly, a host of new footnotes. As you know, in the final published version, the final published version contains no less than 58 footnotes, which is considerable considering the relatively short size of that text. Well, almost all these footnotes have their origins in this stage, right, of Green correcting and editorially amending Reed's TypeScript. In all of the footnotes, he refers to both his stay in the Congo and the publication of a burnt-out case in anterior past tenses. So there is a passage, the press arrived, he relays, and then he adds a footnote. There had been bad riots in Leopoldville 2 weeks before, and nothing could persuade the journalists that my journey planned months ago was not occasioned by them. Another example. So in the diary, there was already this. Cortisone for reaction cases, DDS tablets daily through the mouth is the ordinary treatment. At this stage, he adds the footnote, inaccurate, corrected later. I was wrong at that time. So in doing so, Green overtly flags, identifies his footnotes as insights he did not have at the time of writing his entries in the diary, but acquired later. He shows that he does not want to change the earlier errors of interpretation in the body text of the diary itself. He wants to make it clear that he gained a proper understanding later and wants the journal to come across as authentic, as the authentic record of the original views and thoughts, even mistakes, he had while in the Congo. Yet one should be careful not to overestimate this authenticity. As I have already said, and more is to come, the differences between the original manuscript and the eventual publication are major, in tone, in appreciation, in fairness of representation too. Some of these footnotes added at this stage are highly informative for us as to the gestation process of a burnt-out case while he was in the Congo. The journal contains passages in which Green tried out, so still while in the Congo, possible storylines as well as characterizations for his novel. All these footnotes were retained for the final published version. So Green's gestation process of the novel can actually be studied from that version, and it is therefore not so much the topic of my contribution here today. But let me just draw attention to one development that struck me, namely the changes in how he conceived one of his main characters, who he first simply called X, he didn't have a name yet, then C, and then finally Dr. Colin, the doctor in a burnt-out case. In a burnt-out case, Dr. Colin is depicted as sympathetic, wise, relaxed in his convictions, composed. But from the diary and the added footnotes, we learn that this was not Green's conceptions of the character from the start. So we read in the diary, the book moves a little in his head, right, in his gestation. Opening, a possible opening that he's trying out, the doctor and the burnt-out cases, a bitter, discontented man, tired of the raillery of the priests, unable to do what he wants to do, a hard smoker of cheap cheroots. Now he adds a footnote, in fact, I abandoned the idea of beginning with the doctor, who seems in the writing to have lost his discontent and his cheroots. Original diary manuscript, of course, he could simply walk off like an early Chaplin. At this stage, he adds a footnote, as the novel came patchily into consciousness, the doctor refused to act this jealous role. He soon lost his wife as well as his cheroots, which returned to their rightful owner, the Father Superior. The bitter doctor of my story, so in a burnt-out case, the doctor is not bitter at all, but that was the first idea he had about his characterization. The bitter doctor of my story, Dr. Colin, breaks out on this subject. No such bitterness was ever shown in the book by Dr. Colin, the case of a character who would not conform to the plan. So initially, Green planned on characterizing the doctor as a bitter, discontented man, a married and jealous husband. In the novel, Dr. Colin is a widow, is not bitter or discontented character at all. Green tells us that the evolution of his construal of this character was due to the fact that, as the story developed in his mind, the initial characterization just didn't work. But according to me, Green's strong appreciation of Dr. Le Chat, the model for Dr. Colin, may also have influenced this development. What else, apart from the footnotes, can be said about Green's changes to Reed's typescript? Yeah. Interestingly, Green also adds something at this stage, right, apart from the footnotes. This is a passage with, well, titillating overtones, erotic overtones, if you want. So there was already in the diary manuscript, I was woken by somebody knocking on the door. I put on a Macintosh and opened it on a young woman with so bad a stammer that for long I couldn't understand what she wanted. Now he had extends this sentence. She was a complete stranger. I wore nothing but a towel. He had just come out of the shop. And it was several minutes before she could complete a sentence inviting me to dinner at her home. I find this addition interesting from a methodological point of view. Green again omitted this addition in a later stage, namely in the galley proofs. And this warns us that the changes in the text of Green's Congo Diary cannot simply be studied by comparing the final published version of In Search of a Character with the very first manuscript version. There were changes, additions, and again omissions in between, so that appear in neither of these two extremes of the text's history. The maximal version of the diary, if you want, the one that contains everything that was ever there, does not exist, but must and can be construed by means of a critical study of all the five lives of the Congo Journal. Still concerning this third life, another example of passages that occur neither in the first nor in the last version, have to do with this event. Okay, and you need some background now. Not later than the day after Green's arrival at the leprosy hospital of Yonda on February 3rd, 1959, a Belgian school teacher teaching English at a school in a nearby American Protestant mission disturbed Green at the end of his siesta, seeking advice on literary agents. Green gave him a few names and hoped to have brushed him off for good. But the next day, Green received a note from him, begging for another meeting in order this time to discuss spiritual matters. Familiar with some of Green's books and understanding well how they develop notions of Catholic faith, the schoolteacher wished to talk to Green about his own recent loss of belief. He wished to link this in a private discussion with Green to Green's literary renderings of Christian premises. In the diary manuscript, so the very first life, Green reports on this, writing, "Pursued by the schoolmaster, who now tries to exercise a spiritual blackmail, I am replying that I am not competent in matters of faith. He should apply to a priest." But now, while he's correcting Reed's typescript, he adds the entire note, the entire letter that the schoolmaster had sent him. "Dear Mr. Green, I thank you for the addresses of literary agents you have given me. I'm sure the fathers and sisters, and especially your work, will take most of your time. But if you still have a few minutes to spare, I would like to talk to you once more about religion. I have lost mine after the bankruptcy. Notwithstanding the fact that Monseigneur, so the bishop of the missionaries there, is the godfather of my older son. I don't see how I will ever be able to come back to it, to his faith, right? I cannot understand in your book, The Heart of the Matter, how you let your hero commit suicide. I wish I could be of any use to you, etc." For the eventual publication, this will again disappear, this letter. Another proof that the manuscript version is not the maximum one. Fourth life, from corrected typescript to galley proofs. Not so much to say about this stage. The galley proofs in their uncorrected state are almost but not entirely identical with the typescript, plus all the corrections and additions on it, of course. One of the differences is the erotic passage which was not in the original and which Green had added, as I just mentioned. Right. "I was woken, etc." So Green had added in Life 3, had added the thing about the towel, and in the galley proofs, this is not there. But we have no version of the galley proofs on which it appears and was then crossed out. So my guess is that Green mentioned this orally to the person in charge of preparing the galley proofs. "You know, I added this, but remove it again, please." Galley proofs. These are corrections made by Dr. Le Chat, so the model for Dr. Collin, and Green on the galley proofs itself. Quite a lot, quite substantial. The reason for which I am treating these two together, so Dr. Le Chat's corrections of the galley proofs and Green's correction, is that Green's copy contains both corrections he made on them on his own initiatives and the one he had been given as suggestions by Dr. Le Chat. So in a letter dated June 21st, 1961, Green sends Dr. Le Chat the galley proofs, asking him to go through them and indicating any errors he may have made relating to medical technical issues of leprosy. In reality, Dr. Le Chat corrected and cleansed much more than such medical issue. In his unpublished memoirs, which were handed over to me by his widow, Le Chat wrote, and I find this very indicative, very significant, "The Congo Journal, as it is published, is in fact a text carefully expurgated by me." What Le Chat means is this: when he sent the corrected proofs back to Green, he attached two separate lists. One, indeed, a list of medical mistakes relating to leprosy, and another one was a four-page long plea and admonition urging Green to delete certain passages in which persons were described in unfavorable terms, persons who were still living and working in the Congo. Le Chat writes that these descriptions are unnecessarily offensive and that they would also embarrass himself, as he was the one who had introduced Green to all these people in the Congo. Le Chat's verdict is far-reaching and merciless. saying that the journal is simply unpublishable as such. He even goes as far as to put their friendship at stake. Since you have been confident enough to send me the proofs, I should tell you that I make of that a real question of friendship between us. Green was very impressed by Lachat's severe letter. No less than 5 days later, Green, in a handwritten letter from Tunis, apologizes for all the trouble caused. He emphasizes that everything Lachat suggested has been changed. And 9 days later, he again sends a telegram to Lachat repeating, "All changes made and more besides." The more besides is of interest. Green indeed made more changes, eliminating embarrassing or hurtful comments, than Lachat had requested. One can indeed say that in order to make absolutely sure that their friendship was safe, Green hyper-corrected the proofs, corrected it further than what Lachat asked for. Also important to note is that the changes Green made did not just consist in omitting hurtful passages, although that happened too, but that in quite some cases he completely turned a negative depiction of a person into a fully positive one, at an angle of 180 degrees, if you want. First are examples of Lachat wanting to protect himself. So, in his letter to Green, Lachat wrote, "I should prefer to be less in the spotlight as giving you so many references. It seems a little repetitive. It would be nothing for the printer if you would replace from time to time El Olsha by has been told or one told me." We noticed that Lachat did this in some places, and Green heeded all this. But even in places where Lachat didn't suggest it, Green did it throughout, as a general rule, if you want. Dr. L's story of how a cultivated old gentleman in Paris, etc., is changed into story of how a cultivated gentleman in Paris. L tells me that at any gathering becomes connolial protocol, "I have been told." You know, so the Lachat as a source of information is downplayed. Lachat also wants to protect other people, as I mentioned. Remember the passage in which Green talks about the annoying schoolmaster who wanted spiritual advice from him, and Green quoting literally the schoolmaster's desperate note to that effect. Lachat saw this in the Gallic proofs, and he wanted it out. "He bothered you much at Ionda, spoiled part of your stay there, and the letter of him that you are publishing is not in his favor. But is it really necessary to make the man recognizable? For everyone knows him. The only Belgian and the only Catholic teaching in the only American Protestant school in a city of less than 1,000. He should still be more recognizable since he became bankrupt and the bishop is godfather of his eldest son," etc. "I feel strongly about the contents of this letter. I do not feel it should be published. Furthermore, it is dangerous because this man may become seriously affected by your writing and nobody knows what could happen. I asked Dr. Lachat while still alive and his widow what was meant by nobody knows what could happen. Lachat feared no less than possible suicide." That man was suicidal, the schoolmaster. Possible suicide. Green really takes Lachat's reprimand to heart. Not only does he omit again the schoolmaster's letter from the galley proofs, he also makes a new footnote in which the irritation is rather caused by himself or the heat than by the schoolmaster. "For years, particularly after the heart of the matter, I found myself hunted by people who wanted help with spiritual problems that I was incapable of giving. I can only attribute to the heat my irritation with this poor schoolmaster, and to the fact, perhaps, that I was already beginning to live in the skin of Query, a man turned at bay." Following example, Lachat reads this in the galley proofs about the chief medical office, a hard man, who broke out in tears at a certain point. His father had been killed in the First War. On any great occasion, he was made to parade wearing his father's medals, and he hated this, and at last refused and was punished. "And this is why I now try to be hard and rough." The important thing is what Lachat writes to this. When coming back from Coq is the city where they stayed. In a Bertrand case, this becomes Luc, right? Name Luke. "I told you this story. I thought it was between us. I find this quite important. So a lot of the things in the conversations between Dr. Lechat and Green while in the Congo, for Dr. Lechat, this was confidential, right? It wasn't supposed to see the light of day. I thought it was between us. This man would be humiliated and embarrassed. So Green leaves it out completely. The governor and his wife, governor of the province where they were staying. Lechat reads this in the galley proofs, drinks at the governor's, a simply kind, not very intelligent couple. Madame de Valkenaer, she's the wife of the governor, who has published two books at her own expense, talked interminably of a writer's method and vision. Awful duty drinks with the governor and his wife. Madame V gave me lessons on how one should write a novel, showing her method of taking notes for her next work. So he was really irritated by this couple while in the Congo. In his letter, Lechat writes, "You seem to be very sensitive to the fact that authors publish at their own expense. I understand she irritated you, giving lessons on how to write. But it is another aspect of the human problem. This simple and kindly couple spent 25 years in the Congo, almost always in the bush. Years ago, without boat, without mail, and more, without children. They were walking in the forest 20 days a month, resting the 10 other days in small stations like the missions you visited, going to teach the Congolese how to cultivate manioc, etc. After 6 or 12 years of such a life, the husband was paying for the publication of the book as a tribute to his wife who shared those days. Now that the plantations are burnt, the dispensaries are empty, the tribunals are doing nobody knows what, the book is the only thing which remains for this retired couple, to remember those days, to help them in thinking that all was not in vain. No matter if the book is good or bad, it belongs to another sphere of writing. What she gave to you through the book was not literature, even if she thought it was. You cannot belittle or banalize the past of such people and make them lose confidence towards each other. Please drop this." So Lechat really sermons Green, gives him lessons in compassion, empathy, respect for people smaller, not as intellectual as himself. Green does not decide to delete this passage completely, instead turns his evaluation of this couple a bit disingenuously 180 degrees around, from a belittling one to one of appreciation. He adds a laudatory footnote instead of the mean words that were there first. "They had spent some 25 years in the Congo, almost always in the bush, in the early days without boat and without mail." So literally what Lechat had told him about this couple. "They were on trek in the forest 20 days a month, resting the 10 other days in small missions. They taught the Congolese how to cultivate manioc, etc. Out of such experience came the wife's book of stories which had to be published at her own expense. This is only one example of the tragic waste of small heroic lives." Note how Green almost literally inserts words from Lechat's private letter to him. "I read in Lechat's memoirs that this was never Lechat's wish, that he was even surprised and a bit shocked by this." Other example, the bishop. The bishop of the missionaries, so the head of the missionaries among whom Green spent his time in the Congo. Let me turn it around this time. Let me start from the published version, what you read in the published version, and then go back to what was in the galley proofs and what Lechat wanted him to change. "A wonderfully handsome old man with an 18th century manner, a kind and courteous man. He's unable even to move his head without pain. I am glad to say that the bishop recovered from his broken hip. The apparent boulevardier of smooth colonial days came into his own in troubled times. He has stayed at his post, has the confidence of the Congolais, and has remained firm through all the troubles, helping the white people who have remained in Equatoria." Equatoria is the name of the province. "How often the lives of individual priests reproduce in this way the history of the church." So this is what you read in the published journal, right? Yet, in the original diary, yes, this is in the original diary. "He had been a man who could not stand being alone, who read little and liked cards, as a bishop dignified and immaculate with the big cross round his neck, a kind and courteous man who had never really done anything at all. Now he lies in his pyjamas, alone with his intolerable ennui, unable to understand how to be alone. In all the 50 years since his ordination, solitude has never caught up with him before. There is no sympathy for him amongst his priests. The curé is well content that his bishop should at last know what sickness is like. His second-in-command is tired out with him. I wish I could mail him to Europe, he says. He is aware of how much he could do if he were left alone to do it. What is the source, the origin, the motive of this change? Again, Dr. Lechat, who had warned him, the bishop, he has recovered from his broken hip, and this man, who liked to play cards during the smooth colonial days, proved himself in the present difficulties. The present difficulties, that is the process of independence that went through a lot of turmoil and rebellions, etc. But again, look at the last sentence. Furthermore, I told you the story of the second in command, but I would prefer that to be kept between us. So again, this confidential relationship between the two that Lechat feels to have been trespassed or crossed. In conclusion, these are the five lives. I believe one can safely say that the published version of the Congo Journal and the original manuscript of Green's diary are quite widely apart from one another. The published version does not entirely offer the rawness of materials which Green promises in his preface. The manuscript went through no less than five phases of reworking and thorough editorial intervention, some of which are not minor at all. At least with respect to Green's faint appreciation and sympathy towards some people he met in the Congo, we read a different Green in the different texts. Also, for anyone interested in Green's real mindset during his trip in the Congo, or interested how he felt about his affair in Europe at the time, consulting the manuscript, as I mentioned, rather than the published version, is already a very important good step forward, but there are many things that were added later, removed again, etc. A critical edition is therefore necessary, comparing all different versions, indicating how they differ. I am planning to do that, but I don't yet know how, really. How to do it technically, put it in columns, in juxtaposition, all these five lives, or just work on the original manuscript and then work around with footnotes. I am not sure yet. I know there is an interest, at least in Belgium, among literature specialists specialized in critical editions. But technically, any help, any suggestions, any feedback is really welcome. That's where I would like to stop. I have an encore on the comedians, on the Congo, Green's Congo experience in the comedians, but I think I'm running out of time. If you're interested, you can always ask me later. I'll stop here. Thank you very much for listening.
We've a few minutes for questions. I've got a microphone which you ought to use so that everyone can hear your question. Any questions?
Did Green speak French?
Yeah, he was able to. Yeah, they first with. He did. So Dr. Lechat knew very elementary English, especially at that time. When Green was in the Congo, Green was 54, and the doctor was only 31, 32. His English wasn't very good, and Green's French was better than Lechat's English at that time. Mrs. Lechat didn't speak any English at all, so Green and Mrs. Lechat, that was all French. I have no idea. The audience should know where from. He also spoke most of the missionaries where he stayed. Right, he stayed among missionaries in the Congo were Flemish Belgians, not Francophone Belgians. Well, in general, in the entire history of the Belgian Congo, missionaries were 80% Flemish, because Flanders is more Catholic than Wallonia, more rural and more Catholic. Why am I saying this? Yeah, so they didn't know any English. They knew French, Flemish, especially at that time knew French. So he conversed in French with everything and everyone that was white in Belgian Congo. But I have no idea at what point in his life he learned French. Can anyone help out on that? It's just school, nothing more than that. That's, well, hardly ever sufficient to know to know how to speak a language. But one needs practice, and what needs, it's a start, it's a basis. Yeah.
In the BBC,
Bill.
And in the BBC's recording of Green's speech, there's a little section on who's speaking French.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Michael, for this excellent presentation. I really enjoyed it. And I'm sorry I could not prepare myself for this presentation, but the thing came to my mind when I listened to your presentation. It's about the Burnt-Out case. In a Burnt-Out case, I think it is Marie Riker who reads a book entitled A History of the War of Religions.
A history of?
History of the War of Religions.
Okay.
Religions, right? I have two versions of the novel. The title is slightly changed, different from one to the other. And the author is a writer called Le Jeune. Years ago, Thomas Hill from Japan and myself tried to look for that book on the internet, on specialized shops, and we couldn't find it. Mm. Have you come across this book? Do you know this book or the author?
No. Le Jeune? Well, Le Jeune is a very frequent, very common name, of course, among Francophones. No. Okay. History of Religion?
History of the War of Religions.
Oh, okay. No. I'm sorry. I wouldn't know that book.
Okay. So,
it should have been in French, I guess, then. Le Jeune. Well, how far, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I gave all these examples of Green changing his descriptions on the simple suggestion of Le Chat. He had a tremendous respect for Dr. Le Chat, which...
Do you think the final version is worth the friendship?
Well, that's up to Green to decide. I don't know. Le Chat in his memoirs actually writes that, yeah, well, okay, I wrote him this letter and I asked him to change this and that and to remove this and that, but he went very far. He went much further than I wanted him to go. That's why I used, Dr. Le Chat didn't use that word, but that's the term I use. He hyper-corrected, Green hyper-corrected the journal because he was very afraid of losing. Well, afraid. He really didn't want to lose the friendship with Dr. Le Chat. They remained friends. At least the last letter I found was 1988. The Le Chat couple also went to Antibes. They continued to write to one another. So this was really not just a once-only thing. It was a lasting friendship, really. But as I said, Green went further than what Le Chat wanted. And by going further, Le Chat was again irritated. He says, but now, okay, I asked him to remove this or to change the tone of this and this, and what does Green do? He copies literally what I am telling him in the footnotes, in the published version. Now my words are there. That wasn't my intention either, right? So I honestly think that the respect Green had for Le Chat was bigger than the other way around. That's what I often heard from Lechau when he talked about Green to me. That's what I still heard. Here from his widow, Lechau would say, Green, un homme compliqué, a complicated man. And Lechau was a man of very few words, but when he says a thing like that, you know enough. That is a possibility. The reason why he simply accepted to implement all these changes might be that he realized afterwards, but we're talking about only a year later, right? That he says, yeah, maybe I went too far. Another possibility is that, look, I gave a talk now of an hour on In Search of a Character, but this is not an important item in Green's biography, right? In Green's bibliography. Maybe he just thought, well, look, this is just a diary that I'm publishing. It's not so important that it is very authentic. At some points, that's also an hypothesis that I'm playing around with, that he says, this is not a novel, it's just my journal. It's certainly not my most important book. I'll just do the changes, and it will save my friendship with Lisha.
Yeah.
Thank you.